Let's get started. Let's get started. Okay, my name is Matthias Leitmann. This is my dear colleague Rohit Nagamal. We are both broker managers at Microsoft, working for Exchange. And we have the pleasure today to talk to you about how do you integrate mail and calendar experience with Office 365. Before we get started, some context level setting. I don't spend too much time on this slide. You saw this many, many times. Right? In our past releases, we worked very hard to make it possible that your services, your apps get into the Office 365 ecosystem, into our applications, right? Mail apps, right? If you use them or develop some of them for Exchange, running very nicely in Outlook in our web client. Right? So that is not what this talk is about. This talk is about more about the lower left corner there. This is about, hey, we have now very robust APIs that we believe can do exactly the reverse, meaning it's your applications, your provider-hosted apps, I believe SharePoint called them, right? And you can easily consume our Office 365 APIs and get them into your application. Okay, so this, fortunately, unfortunately, however you want to see it, right, this presentation is not only about integrating mail and calendar applications. Right, this presentation actually spent a substantial amount of time, right, unfortunately the title doesn't give it away, about talking how do you actually get to these APIs, how do you actually successfully authenticate and authorize to those APIs. Right, and that's my part, this is why I'm here, this is my job in Redmond as a broker manager in Exchange. Right, I do the one part of the O story, right, the OAuth story. Right, then later, Rohit will talk about actually the REST APIs that we actually put in place to talk about the other part of the O story, the O data story that we have there. And we do this all of a sample of a native app. So this is what we are building, that we are trying to show you, right, how easy it is to build an app like that. Right, it's a Windows store application. Right, we sign into our services, into Office 365 using an organizational account. That is the first step of an application that it does. In this, we actually get some information from SharePoint. Yes, SharePoint is in the picture in this presentation. Right, we're not spending too much time on that, but we thought it's a good idea. We build a session picker app while we are here after all at the conference. So we have a bunch of sessions in this session list. It's a global list in SharePoint, and we actually put this into our calendar, into your personal calendar, into Exchange. And we spend most of the time on number one and number three, not so much on number two. So that's kind of what we are talking about. So authentication to Office 365, to our APIs, what do we have in place? So looking back, what we do have in place, right, is not a very good story, at least in Exchange. Though I have sources that tell me there are similar challenges in SharePoint. Right, but when you actually want to build an application today against Office 365 using our APIs, the only way what's available to you, as sad as it is, right, is basic authentication. Right, meaning your application collects the user's credentials, right, and sends them to our services to authenticate against our Exchange Web Services APIs, our SOAP-based APIs. And this comes with a lot of challenges. Right, it looks completely different for an Office 365 user that actually starts up your application. You need to build your own dialogues. It's not anywhere integrated into an experience using your organizational account that you use otherwise to log into other Office 365 services. But you need to do things like capturing the password, store it somewhere credentials, store it somewhere securely. Right, and the application really do have a username and password. The application can do everything that you as a user, as an authenticated user, can do against the service. Right, and the last point to the point, right, you have to do similar things for SharePoint. You want to use link APIs. They came up with their own scheme in last receive based on some web token scheme. Right, every workload is different against the APIs. So here comes the good news. Right, so we worked very, very hard over the past 2 years to present you the story that I'm telling you now. The time for all this custom code, this custom logic, this custom maintaining of credentials, hopefully is over as of today or a couple of days of today. Right? because what we're actually going to do, we directly integrate our APIs with the infrastructure that we use to authenticate user against our clients, against our web apps in Office 365. Meaning we use the infrastructure provided by the organizational account that basically provides the user with the interface, right, hosted by AAD, by organizational account, to capture the credentials completely outside the organization, completely outside your application, right, and help the sign-on process there. Meaning your application that you write when you start programming against that has exactly the same experience as we have in all our other applications. And we start doing the same with our rich applications, meaning when you have Outlook, when you have other native apps that we will ship over time, it's the same experience. But not only that, right? So the second what we did, hey, we have APIs, right? We want to protect the APIs. We actually do not want to go down the route giving the keys of the kingdom to an application, to all the functionality available in Exchange, in SharePoint. So we integrated with a model that's very well known in the industry based on a consent-based model to actually have granular scopes and granular permissions that an end user can give to the application. And only those permissions are then allowed, or only that against a very particular scoped set of APIs. Now, as you see in this example, this is not only for Exchange. This is indeed for every API in Office 365. It's one consent, it's one time where the user says it's okay to access my stuff in SharePoint. It's okay to access my stuff in Exchange. So now here's a quick summary of the benefits that we see with this model. Right? Of course, we have the same authentication authorization framework in place, meaning you really do truly only need to write one piece of code to authenticate against any of these APIs. You immediately use the same flows, right? The same flows in all the different types of applications you write. If it is a mobile application, if it's a device application, if it's a web application, it works the same, including the consent. An obvious thing, there's no explicit credential management you have to do. You have the granular permissions in place, and we all base this on a well-known protocol. I will show that in this session, the exact flow on that, how it works based on OAuth 2. Right, and we integrate in Windows Azure Active Directory using your organizational accounts, meaning somebody administering Office 365, right, has automatically these accounts also administered in Windows Azure Active Directory. And all the management experiences that are provided, right, by Windows Azure Active Directory are also available to your applications. Things like revoking permissions, for example. You use Windows Azure Active Directory. A tenant administrator goes there not only for users, goes there for applications. Right? Because it's integrated in AAD and organizational accounts, you have all the flexibility of auth methods that are available to organizational accounts. Meaning you federate in a hybrid deployment model with the on-premise, no problem, right? With ADFS and federation, you can use the credentials of the on-premise user to take advantage in your application, right? You want to do things like form factor in your app? Not a problem, right? Because form factor is enabled on the organizational account that your application uses, and your application, without any additional effort, right, does form factor authentication. That's not cool? It's super cool. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the guts. Right, so how does this model actually work for your application? If you want to build an application like that, right, lots of you know OAuth, I'm pretty confident about that, you need to register your application somewhere. It's no different for us. We use AAD to register your application. It can be any tenant that you like to use. It doesn't need any special tenant. You can, if you have an Office 365 tenant, you can use this to basically say, hey, I want to register an application. And you create your application ID there, your application secret, your redirect URIs, right? And you also define your permissions. These are the permissions my application wants when it runs from Office 365. So now the recommendation is, though, right, if you want to make your applications available to many, many other tenants, right, you might want to consider actually doing this in a special tenant, right, where you don't have your users, right, where you don't have anything else, and this is why this is called an ISV tenant. But no freak out, it's a regular tenant, right? We just recommend create a tenancy in AAD that you use for your application registration. So how does this work now, right? You obviously have your tenant where you register your applications. So during runtime, when your application starts up, you see the sign-on dialog, you see the consent, the user types in the credentials of his organization, which is in a different different tenancy, right? After the consent actually happens in the tenancy of the authenticated user, there's a small footprint created that basically says, hey, right, this application is also now provisioned or known into that customer tenant, right? Meaning that Contoso, a user in Contoso signs on, goes through the consent flow. There is an instance of your application there, right, with recorded permissions, and we talk about that in a second. Right, if some Fabricam user signs on, right, there's a small footprint, it's called a service principle that is created for your application, and the permissions that are given to this application recorded in there. So why is this important? Because it's recorded in the customer tenant, but now you can use the management tools to actually in your customer tenant to see, these are the applications my users have consented to. These are the permissions that are given out, right? And you can use that, right, for things like the like an access panel to basically revoke permissions, right, and keep this nicely under control. So now when I say consent is recorded, there's an important differentiator that I want to draw your attention for a second. A little bit of a tidbit detail there. If you have a web application, right, then indeed what you see on the screen actually happens, meaning the permission that Alice at Contoso gives, for example, to read all SharePoint sites is actually physically written as a record in the tenancy. But this only applies to web applications. Device applications work slightly different, because we believe the deployment model of device applications is different than for a web app. So for a device application where the user has to download the application for his device, the consent is actually recorded in the refresh token. And the management works actually in some kind of a different way, but still using AAD in the context of you do device management. You see what applications are on the device, and then when the user loses the device, you actually use AAD device management functionality to basically revoke this way the access for this application. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about web app before we get into our first demo. So there are roughly three kind of experience you can build as a developer using this authentication framework. The first one you might already know that's available for a while now from the AAD team. A single sign-on using organizational account. We don't change this much. If you use this today, meaning you build a web application, you do WS Federation and SAML sign-on using organizational accounts, continue using that, it's absolutely fine, right? If you want to do OAuth API access, we have two different kind of ways how you can actually integrate the web applications in this model. The first one, it's sign me up. And this basically means a normal user within your tenant actually hits AAD and says, hey, I want to consent to use my things in Office 365. So my calendar, my things. Well, that's one model. You can have an entry point in your web application for individual users to consent to resources in Office 365. There's another different mode that you actually can use as an experience in your web application, and this is sign up your organization. And this uses the same protocol. It just initiates this a little bit differently by specifying a tiny, tiny little parameter with your authorization request. And this is when an administrator actually wants to all the users in his or her organization to have to be signed up for this application. And you can build this experience too. Meaning, if you have an entry point like that in your web app, sign up your organization, the consent will be triggered, and this consent is guarded by an organizational account that needs to be a global administrator in this tenancy. And only this global administrator can say, it's okay for this application for all my users to have these rights in my organization. But from a protocol point of view, it's no different other than saying, hits the same endpoint in AAD, hey, I want to have an end-user experience, I want to have an organizational sign-up experience. All right? So now, another very important tidbit there. So we have the ability, we as resource owners in Office 365, to basically define these permissions that we want to give out to applications. And some of these permissions have some characteristics. And one of the characteristics that we can say on the permission is, this is a permission an end user can consent to, and this is a permission only an administrator can consent to. Most of the permissions in Exchange are end user consentable. But if your application asks for a permission that requires admin consent, then you need to go through the administrative consent sign up. An end user is not capable of consenting to that kind of application. Got that? Good. I have no idea how I'm doing on time, by the way. Didn't start the timer. 18 minutes. Okay, have you seen up registration in AVAD? Somebody? Do this pretty fast. We do this pretty fast. Okay, so this is the Windows AVA Active Directory portal that I'm showing you right now. And because I will type this completely wrong many, many times, I'm signing on with a specific user. This is right now not in production. So if you visited Rob Howard's presentation, he was talking about this too. And we wanted to have it in production by today, that when you hit the AVA portal, that you can actually do this. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, so we need till end of this week to be available in prod. So what I'm using here is a special environment called PPE, which is our dog food environment. And then I'm signing into the Windows Asia portal. Now, with my organizational account. Now, if this organizational account in Office 365, the organization Office 365 has not yet a Windows Asia portal, what will happen here, what you will see here, a sign-up experience. We will work on that to make this also better, that out of the box, when you sign up with Office 365, you have automatically an Asia AD tenant. That's right now, unfortunately, not there. It will take us a few more weeks, hopefully, maybe a couple of months, right? But there is a sign-up experience when AAD recognizes, hey, that's an organizational account, it has an Office 365 tenancy, and it needs an Asia AD subscription. Now, if I have an Asia AD subscription, so I clicked on my Asia Active Directory, which is here called P365 PPE tab 16, right? And I see a bunch of things, users. So this is where you would also see all the users of this organization in AAD. But most important, we have this new application tab here. Right, and you can basically either click there or you can say, hey, add an application that I'm developing. Right, so we want to develop our session picker app. Right, we can basically say it is a web application or it's a native client application. Right, we give it some redirect UI. I come back to that later. I'm just typing in some stuff there. So don't pay too much attention. Right, and then basically registers your application in Asia AD. That's all that you had to do. Right, if I go to my applications, what I should see there now, here's my session picker app that I just created. I go to configure. I see my client ID. I see my redirect URI that I configured. I can do things like logo. That's for the future that will be displayed as part of consent, for example. I can add additional redirect URIs, which I will have to do. But what's most important is what you will see end of this week when you go to the Asia portal, that we have permissions to other applications. Right? And here you basically go, hey, I want to talk to Exchange. Right? Then we show you these are the permissions that are available that we expose right now in Exchange. Hey, I want to give it send mail permissions. I want to have it permissions to full access the user's calendar. Right? And I have SharePoint, of course, there. right? And it's the same thing. It gives you the permissions that are available, right, to consent for your SharePoint app, right? In this example, we read items in all site collections, right, and we save it, right? So that's basically what you do. Now, some of the things to remember for native applications, when you create a native application, per default, this native application is automatically a multi-tenant application. What I mean by that? What I mean by that, if people download this device app, so you do you as an ISV register this application, some organization gets to the bits, installs it, there's nothing to do. It will be automatically multi-tenant, meaning a user signs in from another organization, the machinery comes in place that I showed you a couple of slides back, right, and the user can successfully sign on to your application, go through the consent, right, and use it. It's a little bit different for web application. If you choose web application, then you will see on this page, it's somewhere in the middle, a switch that says this is a single tenant or multi-tenant application. When you create the application, it's not toggled to be a multi-tenant application, which gives you opportunity as a web app developer to try it out, to test it, right, to see is everything working. And then you go back to your app registration and say, now make it available for other tenants. So slightly different what you choose with native app and web app regards multi-tenancy. So let's go back to the slide. Doesn't want to. We had that. Okay. Let's look at the basic authentication protocol flow. So what happens under the cover? After you register your application, you need to write code. Right? So what does the code need to do? To do this kind of thing, right? So that's a little flow diagram. I want to go over this very, very fast. So basically, this on the left side is your application. Then the next is you have your authorization server, which is AAD, which hosts the authorization endpoint, and it hosts the token issuing endpoint. And then, of course, you have our Office 365 APIs, right? An endpoint for Exchange, an endpoint for SharePoint, an endpoint for Link, right? So how does your application work? So your application sends an authorization request to the authorization endpoint of AAD, right? So standard OAuth, you send an authorization request, right? AAD displays the sign-up dialog that you saw on my third slide or something like that, right? The user types in the organizational account, right? Sees the consent screen, right? And then AAD redirects back to your application with an auth code, right? So, and then you use this auth code and say, hey, now give me a token. And this token is for a specific, you say with this request, this token is specific to access, for example, an Exchange endpoint. And you get an access token back from AAD that you can then use to play to Exchange. You can also get a refresh token back, like OAuth flows. So now if you want to use this access token against the SharePoint API, you will get an access denied back, because this access token is for Exchange and not for SharePoint. Now, what you're going to do in your application, right, you basically go back to the token issuing endpoint of AAD, present your refresh token, and say, now give me an access token for SharePoint. And then it gives you back an access token for SharePoint, given the right authorization given by the user, and you can use this access token to actually go to the SharePoint API. So this is basically the summary of what you saw in the diagram, right? So the model works by, so each Office 365 workload require a different access token, right? So access tokens are workload specific. The refresh token is global. So in your application, you only need to maintain the refresh token. And then you go back to the token issuing endpoint to get access tokens to whatever API endpoint you actually wanna get to. So now some characteristics of access tokens. Access tokens are relatively short living, meaning 1 hour in this scheme. So after 1 hour, you can cache this access token. You can build your own cache. Hopefully you do this in a secure way. No worries, there are some other ways. But short lived, you need to prepare your application when it hits an API in Office 365, important that it gives you back a 401 saying it's an invalid token, which is your signal to go back to the token issuing endpoint with a refresh token and get a new access token to and retry the call that you do to this API. What about the refresh token? So now the refresh token is relatively long living, and I can tell you all the characteristics that it is about that we might change in any point in time. Right now it's roughly valid for 3 months. If you don't use it for 2 weeks, it becomes invalid. If the user changes the password, it becomes invalid. It all doesn't matter in for context of your application. How you want to look at the refresh token is it lives forever, and you need to react when you go back to the token issuing endpoint, that the token issuing endpoint gives you a response back saying, that's an invalid grant. I cannot give you a new access token. That's your signal for your application to go back to the authorization endpoint to get a new code and exchange this to a new refresh token. And if the consent is still valid and still recorded, there is no prompt. Right? The user might have to enter their password, right? But that's basically it. So briefly, what's in a token? I don't want to spend too much time on it. There are two key things, and we will show, you will see that in my next demo, right? But there are two important claims in this token. One of it is the tenant ID. So when you build an experience in your application to sign up a complete organization, when you actually get back a token, you can look into this token and use this TID, tenant ID, as a unique identifier to store in your application and say, hey, I know about this organization, and this organization did a sign-up experience for me. If you have an entry point in your application that does user consent, you can look at a different claim, which is called OID, or we would like you to use that, right, to basically say, hey, I know about this user already signed up in my application, you can use this as kind of a marker or management of that sign-up experience happened. So don't use anything like UPN, first name, last name, or whatever is in the token if you want to somehow maintain knowledge about did an organization sign up or did a user already sign up with my application. The link up there explains the whole token, how it looks like. But I want to switch back to show a little demo. I should sign out here to not run into, okay, so this is a little application, little web app that I built a while ago that basically shows the protocol flows that I just explained, right? So this is basically, number one, you select the resource that's just, hey, I wanna have different tokens for different apps, right? And one of the first steps, what I basically said, is you need to hit the authorization endpoint, which is login.windows.net. So when we get in production, just remove the dash PPE, you have the endpoint. It's our authorization endpoint. In the good OAuth 2 manner, you say you want to have a code back. That's my client ID, right? And this is my redirect URI. Can you see it? Do I need to make it bigger? I'm sorry. Can do it like that, right? And with the initial request, you also say, right, hey, I want to have this token for exchange. That's, again, our pre-production environment, right? And that's, I can put some other parameters there to prevent cross-site forgery attacks, right? If you program with OAuth, you should work with a state parameter. It's very well documented in OAuth documents. And you can pass a login hint to org ID. For example, when you know or have a cookie for the user, you could be friendly on that. Right. But what I want to do, I want to actually show you the admin consent, right, which is the same request. Right. I go down, and all I basically do is say prompt equals admin. I say go. Right. This is the organizational account login page. I need to sign on as an admin, which is this user, right, because I want to consent in behalf of all of my organization. Right. And I'm waiting a little bit. So this is a pre-production environment. It's not as fast as a prod environment. It should be substantial faster. than we have it in our production. And then basically you get the, hey, that is your web application, and it wants to do following things. Read directory data from AAD. It wants to read user context, read user calendar, read user's mail, and so on. So everything in one consent dialog. And then I say, okay. And I get a response back. Right, that looks a little bit like this. Right, I get a code back. Right, I put this in one of my dialog boxes because I need the code, right, which is very short living. You need to use it relatively fast. And I make a token request to this endpoint, to Token. I say, hey, I have an authorization code. That's my redirect URI. That's my client ID. That's the code that I have. And I say, go. Right? And the token issuing endpoint gives me like an access token. It gives me actually a refresh token, right, in this response, some other information, right? So some kind of JSON, right? It also gives you back an ID token because we are preparing to actually enable the OpenID Connect protocol for using sign-on. That will, again, it will probably take a couple of more weeks, but we have already kind of footprint there. But how does the access token look like? There's a very nice little tool that you might want to remember, jwt.calebb.net. Right? So if you pass in the base64 encoded URL access token, you actually see, oh, it's somewhat readable, right? I can play this token to the endpoint, to the audience endpoint, pbewindows.net. That's my OIT. That's the user's ID I told you about, right? That's my tenant ID that I told you about, and some other information. And that's the scope and some other stuff. Again, documentation is out there about what these claims all mean, right? So what if I want to have a different token, right? So this is for AAD. So now let's get one for Exchange. I save that. I don't have a code anymore, but I have a refresh token. So now I basically go back to the same token endpoint. I say, hey, I have a refresh token. That's my client ID. That's my client secret that hopefully don't expose like I do, right? And that's my refresh token and so on. I'm hitting the token issuing endpoint. I'm getting the same response back, right, from the token issuing endpoint. I can look inside the access token, but this time it looks a little bit different because it's a token for Exchange. The OIT is the same, the TIT is the same. I know it's hard to compare GUIDs on the fly, but trust me on that. So, and here's the scope parameter for that, right? So that was the token for AAD, that's the token for Exchange. Okay, I did it the hard way in my web application. I programmed the protocol by myself. You can do that. That's not the recommended way how to do it. We actually have libraries for you that makes it much, much easier and encapsulates everything regards those requests, that maintains access tokens, that maintains refresh tokens. You do not have to worry about that. And these libraries are called Active Directory Authentication Libraries, ADL. Right? We have this library available for various platforms, right? Various kind of distributions as NuGet packages for the Microsoft platforms. If you go to GitHub, it's available for iOS and Android. And they provide, dependent on platform, and this is where you need to read your documentation, right? It provides different functionalities. For example, for my Windows Store app, for the session picker app that we wrote, it provides caching for you, meaning it really provides a persistent cache of access tokens and refresh tokens. And you do not have to worry about that at all. That's different for the library used for web apps. You have to do some other things. If you could please hold off till end of the sessions, I got you over there. So please use this library. It makes your life so much, so much, so much simpler, right? So simple that all what you have to write, right, I can use this in my web app, right? One of the first things you do using this library, you tell the library, this is my AAD endpoint I want to use, right? So as I said, right, it's login.windows.net/common, right? That's called the authentication context for this library. That's the first step in your app. You say, hey, this is the authorization token issuing endpoint I actually want to use. Then you get your first token, right? So you do a library call called acquire token async. You pass in, that is the resource I want to have a token for. That is my client ID. I didn't put a GUID in there, that's in my up settings there. And then you basically say, get the access token. Right, and then all you're going to do in your application with the web request to the Office API, you attach this access token to the web request against this API in the standard authorization header with an HTTP request as bearer. Right, so literally when you look on the wire, it reads authorization, colon, bearer, the base 64 encoded things. So what if you want to have additional tokens? No problem, right? You just call the same thing, acquire token, async, you pass in your client ID, you say, this time I want to have a token for SharePoint, and you get an access token back, and you use that, attach this with your web request to SharePoint in the authorization header. Okay, last demo from my side, and then I think I'm pretty good in time. I just want to show you the experience. So that's the Session Picker demo app. First step, right, I'm using ADAL. It's just a framework of an app that we just very easily build together. I just put a button on there called sign on, right? I have a callback on lock and click, right? And I just play the thing, right, and see what happens, right? So one of the first things what I told you you need to do, you build the authentication context, right? Authority points to HTTP, what you saw on the slide deck, right? Just the PPE environment. So just believe me that. So I'm saying that. And then I'm having my application. Nothing happened, right? Because everything what I do is hidden under the sign in here. So I click sign in, right? Now remember, when I talked about application registration and registering your native client application, that you probably need to come back and adjust some redirection URIs, because if you use the Windows authentication broker, it generates a secure redirect for your application, and you don't know that in advance. The only way right now how to figure that out is to use this line of code, right? So, which gives you some like ms-app/sit, and you use this and go back to your app registration and add this as an additional redirection URI in your Windows native app application. So what happens next, right? Next is I start my application. Hey, I say, give me a token, and I want to use it for the graph, for this API endpoint. So what happens? I'm not authenticated yet. I need to authenticate. All these passwords, no sticky notes. Okay, I'm authenticating, I'm getting the consent dialog. That's a native application. It looks almost exactly the same, right, like in my web app, right? I'm giving it consent, right? The reason why I used this account actually was that you see the consent, because I registered my application in a tenancy, in the IMGeeky tenancy, and I used an organizational account in my EXCH Labs tenancy, so that it's a different tenant, that you see it works for a different tenant, right? So I did this, right, and now I have an access token for AAD. You just have to believe me, it's an AAD access token, right? And I want to have now a token for exchange. Again, that's a library call you do, right? Here is the endpoint. It hits our pre-production, right? Rohit will tell you the exact endpoints for prod, right? I do the same thing for SharePoint. That's a SharePoint site, right? So I have a different access token for exchange for SharePoint in my app, right? And then basically I use this access token for AAD to get some data from AAD, mainly the display name and the mail. I'm not stepping too much into this code, but on the left side you see the response from AAD that I'm giving back. Very easy, wasn't it? Cool. Okay, I'm actually skipping that slide and call for my colleague Rohit. I think there's nothing new on that. These are just a rough summary of the steps we went through. Probably one thing, if you want to test your consent flow by yourself, what you actually can do in your Windows Azure tenancy, you can easily create a different AAD tenant, create users there, right, and can basically see how does the consent look like and the consent flow actually goes through. So you actually do not need a complete new Office 365 subscription. You go back to your portal, you create basically another instance of AAD, create some test users there, and can use them to run through the protocol to play around. And now the very good news on that one. A lot of these steps, what you see, so there is a toolkit available as part of the Visual Studio Office 365 tools. When you start it up, it has an entry point that you can use to completely configure your application in AAD without even getting to the AAD portal. Now, is that cool or what? Download it. Okay. The rest of the presentations with REST APIs.
All right. Thanks, Matthias. So I'm going to focus on the mail calendar and contact APIs that we are introducing from the Exchange team. I'll explain the why, the what, and also in the same app, we will actually extend this app to do some calendar and mail operations to show how, if you were to use it in a real app, how would you go about it? Is the kicker. All right, so why? Well, Exchange has many, many petabytes of data. This data is growing rapidly. We are not yet at exabyte, but you know we'll soon be there. And this data is very rich because this is very personal data of the users that can be used for creating very rich apps. So by using these APIs, you can create apps on various platforms that can utilize this data and make the users consent, as Matthias said, within their organization or outside to have these apps available to do all different kinds of things, which are mail, calendar, contacts, and we will extend this to do more and more features within Exchange. The APIs are based on open standards, which means we are using OData, OAuth, JSON. This enables for easy ramp up, lower cost of design and development, and more importantly, it also enables interoperability with a diverse ecosystem. You know, we've already spoken about the granularly tightly scoped permission, but this is actually a very key differentiator. Because in today's world where, you know, EWS, the Exchange Web Services, also has OAuth, but it doesn't allow you to do granular permission. Even if you get a token today from EWS, it basically gives you the keys to everything. And that's not a model that is very easy or conducive for people to adopt your apps. For example, let's say that you, a user might be really wary of giving access to mail send, right? I mean, a lot of people might say, I'm not going to give an app access to send emails on my behalf. But that user might be totally fine in letting the app create an email and store it in the draft folder, which she can then later review and send it herself. So you know, we think that this is going to be a game changer in allowing people to create apps which will have high adoption within organizations. And again, the web-friendly APIs, you know, they're all HTTP, REST-based, enable you to have faster development for mobile and web platforms. So what are we introducing? Well, mail calendar contacts, I'll go more into it. This will be in preview release. We want your feedback. We want you guys to try it. And as I said, you know, because we are using OData, one of the features that OData offers is something called a service description, which is available in the form of metadata. So if you go to the service route, which I have indicated below, you can add to that service route something called as metadata. And when you do that, you get information on what are the different entities, what are the different, let me see if I can zoom this in. Oh, forget it. What are the different entities, what are the different collections, actions, complex types that you have available in your service? The advantage for that is, one, of course, you can quickly learn about the service yourself. But you can also point tools, which are available on OData.org, to generate serializers, deserializers, proxy generators, and all that stuff. And that's not only for .NET or C#, but you can do it for Android, iOS, and all the different platforms. So further going into what are the different top-level entities, if you see, one thing you can do from the service route is go and look at the metadata, and the other thing you can do is go and look at the top-level entity, which is me. Me is nothing but an alias to the authenticated user. So if you have a token for, say, Matthias, me will represent him. And this is nothing but equal to users of, say, Rohit at microsoft.com. So it's just an easy way to access the same URL. But if your app is going to have multiple access to many, many users, then you know, you're free to choose between these two. When? Well, it's available today. So since the iPhone launch, I think this is probably the most exciting thing that's happened. You know, we've heard a lot of things about APIs which are available in a few days in preview, but actually the Exchange APIs are available in production today. So if you have an Exchange online account, you can go and try it out today. You know, this is the URL which is live now. So the production URL for Outlook Office 365 is this, and if you go here and type this URL, you will actually see the metadata, see your email, see your everything. Of course, right now, if you do it, you'll use basic auth. We don't recommend that you use basic auth. But to play, this will work. In fact, let me see if I can show you that quickly. Here. Let me try that URL. So there. There. So if I go to metadata, it asks me, this is my Microsoft account. There, the metadata is available. And if you go to me, you can actually see, I mean, IE doesn't have a very good rendering of JSON, unfortunately. But you can play with it right away. All right. So what we'll be building, we'll extend the app that Matthias had. We are going to do some CRUD operations. I'll show you how you can use the calendar read and write privileges to both get sessions, add sessions, and also do some deleting. And later on, I'll also show you some mail actions. But before I go there, let me give you a quick primer on what we have in calendar. Basically, there are two permissions, read and read write, very easy to understand. Read will give you access to all the entities that are listed here. And write will allow you to do post, update, and delete on the entities that allow that. So calendar group is basically just a collection of calendars that you might be using frequently at work or something. For example, it might be the calendars of your colleagues or family that you just want to view together. Because you know, in Outlook, they have a nice overlay where you can look at them side by side or put on top of each other. So if your app wants to do something like that, you can do that. Calendar groups contain calendars. Most of us just use the one calendar that we have in our account, but you do have the ability to create multiple calendars. So the collection of calendars is called calendars. What we have done is to make it easy, because the most used case scenario will be that somebody will just want to look at their default calendar. We have a /calendar URL. And this will show you all the events that are there in your default calendar. But if you have more, then just add an S there, and you can list all the calendars that you have and then go from there. For me, the most important one in the calendar one is event. So events are the meetings and the appointments that you have in your calendar. And we support all CRUD in there. So you can create, update, delete them. And you can, of course, do accept, decline, and tentatively accept. Events can have further attachments within them. So you can have a file attachment, item attachment. And there are a couple of examples here just kind of give you a flavor of what's an entity and what's a collection, because I used that term before. And so on collections, you will also notice that there are some special elements that you can use for more data. I'll go a little bit more and give you some small sampling on what they are. There's a talk tomorrow from an OData PM, which I have a reference to. If you want to learn a lot more about what are the different URL conventions that OData offers, that'll be a good one to go to. All right. So I think I'll probably jump in and show you the demo or how to build that. It's not switching. Yeah, it is. Good. So basically, we have the ability to add, update, or refresh the SharePoint sessions. So let me just make this visible so we know what we will be clicking. Right. So we'll have the refresh session list, then we will have the add or update calendar, and later we will do the remove. Right. So let's go here. It calls the get sessions. Let's put a breakpoint somewhere there. There we are. So let's fire it up. So we do the same sign in that Matthias showed before. And there, we hit our breakpoint to get the sessions. So what do we do first? Of course, get the access token. So you'll notice here that I'm asking for an access token to SharePoint because I want to list all the sessions that I have created in my tenant. So let me show you actually what the tenants look like. I mean, what the sessions look like. Of course, I'd logged in. So we should see the session list here that we created for the app. So there, you have all these 9 or 10 sessions. And this is what we are trying to get into our app. So we've gotten the token. We instantiate a helper class that I have. And then I'm going to call get sessions. Within that, the first thing I will do, and this is the same pattern that you will see across, is that I'm going to first create a request URL that will be sent over, and then when I get the response back, I'm going to basically put it in an array or a collection. So what does the request URL look like here? You see here, the request URL says, I'm calling the URL to my tenant, and I'm trying to get a session list. And I'm specifically asking only for certain properties, you know, because I don't want to get the whole thing. I just want a few properties like title, start, and end date. And once I get that, let's see if I get that first. So here I'm going to send the request. Let's go. And it's taking some time. There. What did I get? My status code is 200, which is good. So now I'm just going to do some housekeeping, put this in a collection, add it to a session list here, and that should be it. There. So I got my sessions here. And these are the same 10 sessions that I have on the SharePoint site. So you'll notice one more thing, right? So not only did I get the sessions for my SharePoint, but I also tried and extracted the calendar events for this user who is logged in. Because what do I want to do? I want to give the user an ability to say, hey, I want to look at my current calendar, and I want to basically see if I want to add a few sessions to my calendar. So let's go and quickly see how do I do the get on the calendars. So there's actually a method for that. Let me put a breakpoint here. And what happens is this gets called whenever there is a on-change event on this list. So if I change, and I get that head. So you'll see the same pattern, right? I'm first going to ask the access token, but this time, notice, I'm asking it for exchange. Once I have that, I use a helper class and call my getCalendarEvents method, in which I'm going to create the request URL for getting all the events. So let's go and look at what does that look like. So I'm giving it two parameters. I'm saying, hey, I want to find all the events which are between date X and Y. So if you notice here, I'm saying, give me all the calendar events, right, which have these properties, which are they're ending greater than this date and starting less than this date. And one more thing is I'm saying, I don't want all of them. I just want the top 10. Well, I should have stepped into this, but either way. Let me just quickly show you what happened here. I got so I had passed the request URL. I added the necessary headers, which is just the accept header. And then I called the call, received the response, put it in a collection just like I did with my sessions. And what should happen here is that I get my sessions for that day. So if I keep browsing, let me remove this. Right, so if I keep browsing, I keep the session for the different results. If you here notice that this is for 3-4, if I go down and I say 3-5, then I get the events for 3-5. So what we've seen, quick recap, is that we've seen how you can do read for SharePoint, how you can read for Calendar. Next, let's do a little bit of update, which is creating an event. So I'm going to try and add an event from here to here, and then update a similar event, and finally finish it by removing the event. So let's see if we have this event already. We don't have this event in my calendar, and I'm interested in attending this. So I go put a breakpoint. Should have it there. I'm going to click it. There, I'm in my add button, click. First thing I do is okay, what is the session that you want to add? So I grab the selected session, and that says here, OData 101. Same thing, go get the access token for Exchange because I want to play it against an Exchange endpoint. Create my helper class. And here, what I do is I convert that session, which is a SharePoint session, into a calendar event. So this is a simple object creation. And you know, when I was telling you that you will have the serializers and token proxy class generators, you can use those instead of handcrafting these classes like calendar event, which we've done here, right? So these are the different properties. So these will get auto-generated for you. So I basically take the session information, like the session ID, the start, end, and I convert it into a calendar object by putting the subject and location and stuff like that. So I should be back. So I get my calendar event, and now I want to add it. So when I step inside, again, what is the request URL I should use? But before that, what I want to find out is, that does this event already exist in my calendar? Because if it does, then I don't want to add it again. I want to update it. So for that, we are just going to use the SharePoint ID as my correlation ID. Now here, I want to make sure that you guys don't think that this is the right way of using correlation IDs. This is a very crude method. In fact, we are discussing internally on what will be a good correlation ID to use across different workloads like Exchange, SharePoint. And if you have suggestions, please send it our way. But in my example, I'm just going to say, hey, if this SharePoint ID exists in the subject, then I know that this event already exists there. Here, so I made the call, and it says zero. No, this doesn't exist. So I know that I don't have to do an update, but instead I have to do an add. So what is the URL that we use to post an event, right? So it's the events collection. So if you do a post on the events collection with the request body containing all the parameters that are required for creating an event, then that should work. So next I just go and serialize my calendar event into a JSON object. And this you can do using many JSON serializers available in various platforms, like JavaScript has it, .NET has it. So it just creates an escaped JSON, which has all the properties that we had in our calendar event class. And next I go and create my request, which has the right headers. And I'm ready to call it. So let's do it. Perfect. So I got a 201, which is created, which is perfect, which means that it was able to create an event for me. Now I can decide to actually get the response back and store it in my app. I'm not going to do anything with it, but just to show you guys that you can actually deserialize it back and have that calendar event that you just created and maybe store it somewhere in your cache or something. So let's see. Let's exit out. There you have it. So I have my event that I just created. To make sure that it's there, we can also see it in the calendar. So there, what was the time? So this is on 3-3 at 11. So we got a 3-3. That's the one. It's the 101, yep. Oh, wait, the time shows difference, 9:15, yeah, it's right here. Must be a bug. All right. So next, what I want to see is that we have just finished creating an event. Let's say that there was a change to this event, right? Something changed, they changed the room, some information, and I want to update that in my calendar. So how would you go about doing that? So let's go back to our session list and update something there. If find the session list there. Which one was it? It's the same Orator 101. So let's take that and say the room is, say, 101. Save it. So if I go back and refresh my session list, I should see, let me remove this breakpoint. There you go. I have 101 back here. And now I want to send this over and update it. So I just click the same thing. Or, you know, you can use the Windows 8 app, and you can also do things like drag and drop. I don't know if it works, but yeah, it should. And there you see, location has been updated to 101. I forgot to change the, put the breakpoint back. I can show you that again. But let me get the, it was there, but there. So let's say add an update, because it was on the click event. So this time, I get the access token, create my helper class, convert it. So this time what you'll notice is that I should get an event already there. So if you see, yes, it says that this event already exists, in which case I'm going into update. The URL for update, very simple, the same events collection, but of course you have to provide the ID of the event that you're trying to update. Same thing, put your post data, which is nothing but the serialized calendar object. You can choose to omit the fields that you don't want to update and just give the ones that you want to. Create the request object, and the response is good, and we are fine there. So that's how update works. Finally, let me show you how remove works. So, there I have a, so I click remove. I grab the event that is selected, which I have to remove. So just to show you, this is the session Orator 101. I get the access token for exchange, and I call the delete method. You'll notice the URL for delete is exactly the same as update, except that it's easier. You don't have to create a post body. You just have to call delete on the item. And there you go. You're done. And the event is gone. It's gone from here. It should be gone from the calendar. On 3-3, sometime around 9:15. We don't have it anymore. So there you go. Let me go back to the deck. All right. So yeah, so one more thing that I wanted to show as demo was how do you use the mail entity and use it to send mails. We will basically say that, you know, if you have a session and you're interested in attending it, you might want to share it with your friends and say, hey, you know what, I'm going for this session, these are the details. So we pre-fill the subject and the body with all the necessary information, so you just have to enter the ID and you can send it. But before I get there, just a quick primer again on mail. So mail has three permissions. It's a little different from calendar because we've added a different permission called send. And this was by getting feedback from a lot of customers is that people are wary about providing apps with send privileges, so we wanted to call it out separately. It doesn't mean that you can't do it, it's just that it'll be specifically called out and somebody has to consent saying, you know, I also give send privileges. So read again, you can read all these entities, read and write, you can create all these entities, and send means the mail can be sent out. The main entities are folder. Of course, I don't have to explain. A collection is called folders. We allow you to create, update, delete, and copy and move folders. Folders can contain messages, and messages are pretty rich, right? You can have not only copy, move, and create, update, delete, but you can do reply all, forward, and send. And these can be only done with send. You cannot do reply all, forward, send with read, write. You'll get access denied. But you can do a create reply all, create forward. And this is, goes back to the example I was telling you earlier, where your app could do this message creation, store it in the drafts folder, and somebody can review it and then send it themselves. And of course, messages have attachments just like events. And you can create, update, delete them. Similar sample to show you what a entity looks like, what a collection looks like, how you might use it in a URL. So good, so let me show you quickly. This should be quick because we've already gone through the pattern. So let's edit the add. So we've added a session. Now let's see, I wanted to share it with your friends. Let me make sure, I hope I have the right. By the way, this is how, oh, I can't change it now. It's running. There. So when the send mail clicked will be called, I'll hit this. So share it with friends. I'm going to give my ID. Say send. So we're here. Grab the token for exchange. Create the message object and provide the properties for the message object, which are who are you sending it to, the subject body. Create my helper class for mail, which just has one simple method called send mail. And here, I again construct my URL. Let me give you a quick roundup of what it is. So if you see, very similar to how when we were doing event posting, you have to create a message, you have to post it to the messages collection. Now, you have to provide a parameter called message disposition equals send only. Now, in the last couple of weeks, we've actually removed this requirement. So you don't need to do this anymore. If you just call this particular endpoint with your message object, it will work. Doesn't mean you cannot do that. You can. And the reason for that is we have a few other parameters or custom parameters that you can give there, which is send and save, which will allow you to not only send the message, but actually save it in the sent items folder. And there is one which is save only, which could be used by the write permission. So similar pattern, we create the post data, which is the serialized message object, create the request with the right headers, and calls send. So we got a 201 created, so we should be good. I should get the email in maybe a minute or two, but we'll see it when it lands. Maybe we won't because my Outlook is closed. Let me. It should show up. But not yet. I should get it. All right. So the last thing is contacts. There's not a lot of entities in contacts. It's pretty simple and just has read, write. Contact folder contains contacts. You cannot do CRUD yet on contact folders. You can only do a GET. That'll be something that we will be looking at later to add. And then contact has a collection of contacts. You can create, read, update, delete, and sample queries. Now, one thing to note that I have there below is that these contacts are the ones that you have added in your Exchange account. These are not the users in your org. To get to that, you have to use the Graph API. And that's what Matthias used in his earlier demo, right? So you can use that user profile info to get to all the users in your GAL. These are, you know, the IDs that you've created. So if you have a sales team and you've added all the sales contacts that you have, all the leads that you have, those will be available here. Just to reiterate, you know, the power of the REST APIs is not just that you can access these data across HTTP, and that you can do it using scope permission. But OData provides a lot of flexibility in how you can retrieve this data. It has a very good URL convention and very strong query language that you can use to get exactly the data that you want. So for example, you know, there are some scenarios here. I'll show you quickly in a demo, actually, where you can execute it today in your Exchange Online account if you want to. It's actually available from the same sandbox that Matthias built. So I go get a, that should, the right password, hopefully. Yep. So I get my permissions, my token, and then we have a URL here called play with the API. So here, if you want to get the 5 most recent messages, you just say top 5, right? Say go, and you get the messages. You can see the different messages here. They have all the different properties in the messages, all in JSON. Let's say you wanted the next 10 messages. Now, this is important because, you know, there is a concept of pagination where your app might want to display only 5 messages at a time. So OData allows you to do it by using skip and top together. So you can say, give me 5, skip the last 5, and then you can keep incrementing the skip to say skip 5, skip 10, skip 20, and you'll get the next messages that you have. Let's say you wanted to get messages sorted by some particular field. You can use the order by, so that you'll get messages here, ordered by date, time, created. Let's say you wanted messages only with certain properties, right? Because you have an app in which you just want to display the from and subject and nothing else. Then you can use the select to give the list of properties that you want. And when you do that, you get just those. So here I got the from, the date, time, created, and subject. Now, one bug that we have that we are going to fix, we are in the middle of fixing, is that, you know, you also get a lot of this calculable OData properties, which if you, in your header, if you say, I just want minimal metadata, then these should not show up, so that you can reduce the payload and not have too much information in the response. So, but this is something that we're fixing right now. A couple more examples. Let's say you wanted to get events after a particular date time. You can say, you know, give me where the start is greater than so and so. And the last one, maybe I'll just show one more, where on contacts, say you wanted to get all the contacts that contain the name of the test or contain like Rohit. And you say go, and you get just that one thing. So I think I'm pretty much close to done. Maybe we are also out of time, all right, are we? Yeah, very close to end of time. All right, so Matthias, maybe we can just give a quick takeaway. For mail, calendar, and contact, you know, I think the main takeaway should be that the APIs will allow you to create end-to-end scenarios where you can stitch SharePoint, Exchange, Calendar, all over Office 365 to create apps with targeted scopes. And, you know, it's lightweight, quick to develop. It really took us very little time to come up with that app. And as you saw, right, the pattern is so similar. You can do it once for one particular entity. You can do it for everything.
The same on the auth side. In some of the examples we have the same auth model. Right, don't use basic auth anymore. One takeaway, please, 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 if you write applications against Exchange, against Office 365, no more basic auth. Everybody switches to OAuth now, okay? Signed up. We put a bunch of slides there that the application that you saw that we worked on is actually available to you on CodePlex. So you can download the Session Picker app, you can play it against your tenancy, adjust some things, right? We shipped all this code, we will improve it over time as we have time to add more things there. If you want to build starting your own application, there are some more templates available that starts basically from scratch to integrate with AAD as an MVC or a Windows 8 app. It's also available on CodePlex. There are a bunch of papers on the auth side. There are a bunch of papers on the mail, calendar, contacts API side. All these links work and are live. If you get in possession to the PowerPoint, you can click there, you can read, and you can start playing even in production, right? Rohit showed you, if you pop up your Explorer, you type in the OData URL, you're getting prompted, yes, it's basic auth, but if you want to start playing around, cut and paste some of the queries that you saw in Rohit's stacks into the Explorer, and you have an Office 365 mailbox, you will see the results. You can start experiences today in prod all these APIs.
I mean, you just need a browser, right? I mean, you don't need any tools. You just go to the browser, you start typing that URLs, and you'll see the results. And then you can start seeing what properties you're getting. You can play with the API. It's really, actually, that's how we learned most of it, right?
We both love feedback. These are our email addresses. If you see something, there's a gap somewhere, you want to have more information, don't be shy. We are not. At least I am not.
You know that. I have a picture to prove that.
Calls to actions, you saw that many times. Here are they, again. Right, we monitor feedback also on Stack Overflow. Right, but again, feel free, email us directly, that's cool too. Right, and start using our tools, start using our APIs, right, and have lots of fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.